When the Supreme Court this week turned to the Pledge of Allegiance case, Justice Antonin Scalia got up from the bench and left the courtroom. He has recused himself because of comments he made last year that appeared to prejudge the case. Justice Scalia has refused, however, to disqualify himself from another case to be argued next month involving his good friend, Vice President Dick Cheney. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports that Supreme Court recusals are rare.
Conflict of interest rules were virtually non-existent for the first 100 years or more of this nation's history. The country's first Chief Justice, John Jay, served simultaneously as ambassador to England and Chief Justice, while also being elected governor of New York. President Thomas Jefferson, in lengthy correspondence with his first appointee to the court, William Johnson, sought to influence the internal functioning of the court. Justice Samuel Chase, appointed by George Washington, actively and publicly while on the court, campaigned for John Adams for president. Legal historian Eben Moglen.
Official Washington lived in boarding houses where everybody knew one another and where, indeed, national partisan politics made the Supreme Court a possible jumping-off point for the presidency of the United States. So there are cabinet members scheming to become Supreme Court justices and Supreme Court justices scheming to become cabinet members and people on both sides of that division thinking about becoming president.
Even after the central government and the nation as a whole began to expand, relationships, both political and commercial, often blended. Justices often participated in cases involving former clients, and some remained actively involved in seeking to influence the other branches of government. Chief Justice William Howard Taft had a wide array of political and legal friends who sought to enact his policy preferences into law, and Justice Louis Brandeis secretly hired then-Professor Felix Frankfurter to do the same for him. As late as the 1930s and 40s, the rules on judicial qualification were, by current standards, very loose. Justice Hugo Black ruled on the constitutionality of laws he'd written as a senator. Chief Justice Fred Vinson never hesitated to sit in cases involving tax legislation that he'd authored as a member of the House of Representatives. Throughout the administrations of Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman, justices and presidents continued close personal friendships. Justices Robert Jackson and William O. Douglas both held important positions in the early days of the New Deal, and even after their elevation to the Supreme Court, they continued to dine and play poker with the president. Discussions of court cases, however, were apparently out of bounds. Historians cite the case of Justice Abe Fortas as the turning point. Fortas had been President Lyndon Johnson's lawyer, friend, and confidant for decades. And when Johnson named Fortas to the court, the relationship apparently remained so unchanged that Supreme Court justices, upon entering Fortas's chambers, saw maps of bombing targets in Vietnam spread out on the justice's couch. The other justices were appalled. But it was a separate conflict of interest scandal that finally forced Fortas to resign in disgrace. The Watergate affair brought the Supreme Court into direct conflict with the presidency. Days after the court's unanimous ruling, Richard Nixon became the first president in American history to resign. Columbia Law School professor Eben Moglen.
The activity of the American press in the Watergate era certainly changed the rules within official Washington about what reporting did. And I think that, in turn, had a significant effect in changing Supreme Court judicial behavior.
Indeed, Justice William Rehnquist recused himself from the Watergate case because he'd been a top official in the Nixon administration. 2 years earlier, however, the newly minted justice had surprised just about everyone when he participated in a case that challenged the constitutionality of the Army's domestic spying operation aimed at Vietnam War protesters. Lawyers representing the targets of the spying had assumed Rehnquist would recuse himself, since as Assistant Attorney General, his office had presumably given legal advice on the operation, and Rehnquist himself had defended the Army's spying program in congressional testimony. But Rehnquist did not recuse himself. Indeed, he cast the fifth and decisive vote, throwing the case out of court. The losing side then petitioned the court for reconsideration based on Rehnquist's failure to disqualify himself. The court denied the petition, and Rehnquist issued a lengthy explanation of his position. In sum, he said that his general legal views did not make him biased and subject to recusal under the then-existing federal disqualification statute. The opinion provoked an outcry from legal ethics experts. Jeffrey Stemple of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, has written extensively on the matter.
It's the conclusion of an awful lot of legal ethics professors that Justice Rehnquist indeed did have a dog in the fight of Laird versus Tatum and did have something more than just an attenuated official interest in the outcome of the case, because the case was to some extent about the persuasiveness and correctness of Justice Rehnquist's advice to the White House when he was Attorney Rehnquist.
In part as a result of the furor, Congress changed the federal disqualification statute for judges, requiring them to disqualify themselves in cases in which their impartiality, quote, could reasonably be questioned. It is that standard that Justice Scalia said last week he did not violate when he went on a duck hunting trip with Vice President Cheney. The case that Scalia declined to recuse in tests Cheney's refusal to disclose information about the contacts his Energy Task Force had with energy industry executives in formulating the Bush administration's energy policy. Scalia, who said he never discussed the case with the vice president, said that the recusal rules do not require disqualification because of a personal friendship. University of Virginia law professor G. Edward White.
If they go to cocktail parties and hang out with members of an administration and have social relationships, it seems to me that's the situation where if you suggest that because of some appearances they should recuse themselves, then I don't know where you draw a line.
But Professor Moglen points out that the Cheney case is loaded with political repercussions for the Bush administration, an administration that is the only one in American history to have won its place by vote of the Supreme Court.
I think the question of the special relationship between an administration installed by a 5-4 vote of the Supreme Court and one of the more partisan members of that majority is the unique factor here. And Justice Scalia has now come into a position where his continuing personal and political relationship with the Vice President of the United States has become an issue in a case concerning the activity of that incoming administration, how it chose to form its policy, with whom it chose to consult, and to what extent it owes the public an account of that policy formation process. That's an utterly unprecedented situation in the history of the United States.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.